Hello, everyone. This is the Modern Spirit Podcast, episode number 5. This is Dr. Joseph Tafur. I just conducted an interview some time ago with Amy Martone, a registered nurse and energy healer, who is going to tell us about the remarkable healing of her husband's brain cancer, totally unanticipated. And very interesting as an anecdote for us to try to learn more and more about these miracle healing cases that, at the very least, seem to have something to do with spiritual healing techniques. So here we go. We'll enter into the podcast. Hope you like it. I'm here on the Modern Spirit Podcast with Amy Martone. So I want to introduce Amy. So Amy, your career is, your professional career is what exactly again for the people?
I'm a registered nurse.
Right.
And I'm also a registered yoga teacher and a Reiki master teacher.
Okay. So then you do all that. And what kind of setting do you work in as a nurse?
Right now I'm working for an ophthalmic practice. I do primarily the IV injections that they need there. They have to have a nurse to do them, so mm-hmm. It's pretty easy. I just access veins all day.
Okay, good. So you've been practicing as a nurse for how long now? How long have you been an RN?
Almost 10 years. Yeah, almost a decade.
Okay, wow. And then the Reiki, you know, so yoga is one thing and Reiki is another. And how long have you been involved in Reiki?
With Reiki, I officially became trained in it about 5 years ago.
Okay.
But I have a feeling that now that I understand it more and work with it on a daily basis, I think I've been practicing since I was a child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you feel, what got you interested in Reiki in the first place?
I had heard about it a lot through like the different massage places I was going from, you know, massage therapy or acupuncture, and I'd see it on the menus and I'd, you know, ask about it and people would say, oh, you know, it's this energy healing. And at that time I didn't know what I knew about it now. And I'd rather get a massage because my neck hurts right now and I want it to feel good when it's massaged. So I kind of put it off, and I eventually kept running into the word Reiki, or I kept hearing about it from people. And it wasn't until I was in India doing my yoga official training that they had offered us on our first day off an opportunity to meet with this wonderful teacher who had traveled all over the north of India and had spent time like in the Himalayan mountains meditating in solitude. And this man just like emanated light. So it was one day it was our first day off in like 2 weeks, and it's pretty rigorous training. So I was looking forward to a relaxing day. But they said, if you want, you can do this, you know, 12-hour Reiki 1 training with this guy who's coming in for 2 days.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, I don't know. So just go back about 3 days prior to him coming, I had pulled my back a little bit. I have an old injury that I slipped an L3 disc a long time ago as a nurse. Every now and then it acts up, and it had started acting up pretty badly in India. And the teacher recommended, he said, well, if you're not sure about taking this Reiki training, why don't you get a session with him the night before? So you can see what it's like and see if it's something that, you know, resonates with you and you want to learn. So I said, okay. So I had a perfect opportunity with an injury to see what it felt like and to really, you know, see how, if it worked or not. So I met with him as soon as I got near him. Like, he just felt like he had, you know, light coming out of him, just really good energy. felt very comfortable around him. The room had like incense going and nice music. I think we started face up, and it's just a light touch. You know, it's, you know, about a half hour in the front part of your body. You know, you're fully clothed, and, you know, it's very non-invasive. Very light touch, and then you flip over and you do from your head, you know, all the way down your back and down your legs. So the hour passed by really quickly, and got up, and what would normally hurt to kind of push up, you know, and use your lower back muscles, I felt no pain. So I was like, okay, let's get over to the side of the bed, and got on the side of the bed, stood up, kind of moved around a little bit, and all of the pain was gone. It wasn't tight anymore. and then when I, excuse me, when I left the room, I had a little bit of a walk. The ashram that I stayed at was pretty pretty wild. I was in the jungle parts of India, which is really a unique experience. To get to my echo house, that was basically meant that you're one with all the bugs and there's not a lot of screens.
Wow.
Was pretty far from the place where I had done the Reiki, so I had to walk by myself at night. And I remember walking back and I could see the moon and my whole body felt different. I felt like I had this new circulation. I could kind of feel, you know, being a nurse and doing IV stuff, I know where all the veins are. I could feel this different, you know, circulation happening.
Right.
So I was sold. So I took the class the next day and that's how it started.
Wow.
And,
okay, so that was then. But you were saying, so why did you become a nurse? What drew you to nursing?
Oh, into nursing? So even as a little kid, I always, you know, if somebody was crying or upset, I was always the one running over and, like, rubbing their back or just trying to, like, make them not cry or help them. And it wasn't until, I was working with my mom at this travel agency. She had got me the job when I was 18. It was an office job. I ended up getting to travel a lot with it, which was awesome at that age. Mm. But I loved helping people in that job, but it wasn't enough. I felt like in the 40-hour work week, I was planning these great European vacations for people and really putting a lot of effort into it and making it great for them. I wanted to help on a deeper level. So I left a pretty well, you know, it was a job that didn't require college. I left and it paid really well considering I didn't have a college degree at that point. I left that and became a nurse's aide. I can't remember what exactly happened that was like, oh, we'll go into this. I might have seen an ad or something. I think I was kind of pondering about the idea of nursing school or going to college because I'd never done any college. So I became a nurse's aide, and I said, well, let me see if I can even handle this before I sign up for nursing school, which I know is really, you know, intense. So I started as an aide on a really busy cardiac unit, saw a lot of, you know, acute situations and life-threatening situations, and, you know, was exposed to, you know, life and death, and it really changed a lot for me. It opened my eyes to the fragility of life and just kind of made me appreciate the fact that I could walk and feed myself and, you know, go to the bathroom and all that. So I said, oh yeah, nursing's for me, I'm sold. So I went into nursing school, and then because I had been working in the hospital, got a job right away. I did medical surgical for about 3 years and then did cardiac for under a year because I was offered a case management job at this old folks home, and that was really fun. And then I ended up working at a holistic IV center that's now I think they're closing. I'm not sure. There's a lot of people leaving, but now I'm working at the eye place. I've sort of moved around, but
okay. You've seen a lot of different kind of areas of medicine and whatever, work with a lot of different doctors and things like that and other healthcare providers. And so then, you know, then the Reiki, did your Reiki training. You had this pretty impressive experience, you know, out there in the middle of the jungles of India. And so then when you came home, you kind of continued your training, but did you start practicing? Like at some point you started practicing with people, like with clients or just on friends or?
I'm just going to plug my phone in. I might take you off video because I think that's what's sucking up my battery.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fine. You can take the video off. We can take it off.
Okay. I'll plug you in too.
That's right.
So I had practiced with, when I first did the training, they do recommend that you only work on yourself for, you know, a time, because as energetic beings, you want to be nice and clear and calm energy before you start working on someone else, because, you know, they can definitely pick up on that. And I also believe that the Reiki energy itself won't go into the client if it's got to work on you first, if that makes sense. So
right.
You kind of need to heal the healer before you can start working on others, and I think that's just good advice all around. And the time frame, I think, is individual. For me, I'm very regimented, we'll say. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it for a full year. You know, I'm only going to work on me. I'm just going to do self-Reiki, like, every single day. you know, with my meditation, with my yoga, I'm going to add in this 15-minute self-reiki with affirmations.
And then, so you meditate and do yoga every day?
I meditate every day. Yoga I try to do a few times a week. And there's, you know, different ways that I practice yoga. It's not always the postures. It could be breathing exercises or, you know, gentle stretching, because I like to, you know, kind of listen to my body with the yoga. But yeah, I definitely meditate every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that. And so you're doing that, you're doing self reiki, mm-hmm. and just kind of developing your craft, and you're having experiences with yourself. Like you feel something, you sense something, you see something.
Yeah, the biggest thing that I felt was when I would put my hands on my stomach, on my lower abdomen, which are a big, you know, health issue for me right now, and was back then a sort of a chronic thing. When I put my hands on my stomach, I would, you know, feel a lot of heat. Sometimes I would feel like I wasn't sure if it was the heat from my hands or if my hands were feeling the heat from my skin through my clothes, but I would just feel lots and lots of heat.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I would start to feel, you know, the gurgling, and I'd feel like kind of bubbling and just, you know, more sounds, like digestive sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Peristalsis would get faster. The movement in my stomach would get faster. Or if I was, you know, if that morning my stomach was really upset and kind of already gurgling, it would calm down when I would do it. So I noticed it right away. And I don't know if that was, you know, my own right. interpretation of it or what,
but I would
also feel like a pulse come through sometimes, like a pulsating feeling, and then it would calm down. And I still feel that with other clients to this day. Like I can kind of, I'll feel heat on areas that are stuck, and then eventually it kind of cools off. And then when you work on the abdomen, sometimes you can work on other areas and the abdomen will make sounds, and it's mm-hmm. all good signs that the energy is shifting and it's moving through blocks. And
okay.
It's nice to get that confirmation too from a, you know, medical practitioner's view of that actual physical
right.
observation.
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
But then, so then maybe just to frame it a little bit, if you don't mind, like just like your own health struggles, like just to kind of give an idea of what you've been working through. You don't have to tell us everything, but just like maybe some of the, if you want, like some of the diagnoses that you yourself have been healing through.
Yeah. So, you know, and these are just words that people have labeled the body, and I try not to get too attached because, you know, I do think that there's energy and that some people kind of become their diagnosis.
But I
have officially had a few labels over the years, and probably the worst one I'm dealing with currently is endometriosis. I've had, whether it's IBS or Crohn's, I've been labeled both,
mm-hmm.
which is digestive. And that kind of affects me in various ways. And then I have Epstein-Barr virus, which is mono, and that kind of kicks up every now and then because mm-hmm. I also have Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Did you hear, by the way, that somebody just brought this up to me, and this is a new thing, that Lyme's is actually they're learning that it's sexually transmitted also, that somehow.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, yeah. They found it with mothers and it passing on to their children.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so basically just to kind of run it down for people. So it's endometriosis, which is this idea of kind of this menstrual tissue leaking out into the abdomen and causing a lot of severe pain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the Crohn's or the IBS, just kind of bowel inflammation, and then. And then, like you said, kind of struggling with some immune-related stuff like mono. Some people get through it and then still struggling with it. And then Lyme's also, you know, some people do get treated and they get through it, and other people seem to struggle.
So oh, that's, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it's just it's really hard. It's difficult when you have other autoimmune. I've seen with a lot of patients, too, that I used to take care of, that they usually have a lot of other things going on. It's never just,
right.
Oh, I have Lyme disease. I have...
Right.
You know, I've always had IBS, and I've had, you know, Hashimoto's or thyroid issues, because the Lyme disease can go everywhere, you know.
Right.
And
no, so you definitely see that.
A tick can also carry a lot more than Lyme disease. It can carry, you know, babesiosis, anaplasmosis. There's so many other co-infectors. So
yeah,
it's a. And if you don't have the right testing right away, then You know, it can definitely be a little harder to treat. And I was a woodsy girl, so.
Right. So, yeah. So, I mean, basically, I'm just, because that'll be possibly the other episode of some of your own healing. And but I'm trying to frame, you know, set the stage. It's like, well, here's Amy. You know, this is a healer who's been drawn to healing, who's a professional, a nurse, that's been working all these professional medical environments. And then kind of is like drawn spiritually as somebody, you know, who's going through their own healing process to practice, you know, Reiki and, you know, practicing on yourself and, you know, it's kind of feeling it out and learning about kind of what, when you feel like there's a response. And then when was the first time you worked on somebody else?
Let me think. So I'd have to look in my Reiki book to see who my very first client was. I've kept track of everyone, the dates that I work on people. But it was definitely family because I was, I didn't want to work on strangers yet because, you know, I was new and I had to follow this, you know, really long, you know, Japanese hand placement, very regimented. And I followed the rules very specifically. I wanted to make sure I had it right. So I think I worked on my sister and then my mom. And it was incredible. It was so different working on another person. It felt so much easier than self-Reiki. And I think it just kind of goes with my, how I kind of live, but it just, I just felt like I had, you know, rivers and rivers of love to give, you know, obviously to my family. And then still to this day, when I practice on others, I feel very, so much, like, I just feel like this endless cup of love, like it just flows. Right. So it was a great first experience with others for sure.
And so then, so yeah, so there's like kind of classic wounded healer, gifted individual, but like, yeah, like me or a lot of people I know, then it's like always a little less motivated to or less successful with themselves, you know, and needs help like everybody else, it seems. But at least in my case, I'm saying. So then you start, in other words, it's just like, I don't know, it's just an interesting thing to have to be gifted like that. And then also, like everybody else, you need help, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes other people are the ones that help us, but the healing, working on ourselves, I think is so important.
But that's also a big part. You know, I think every person can learn Reiki. They can, you know, they can get the attunement, which is a big part of, you know, becoming able to do this work is the attunement process.
Can you describe a little bit about that? Like, so first, like,
oh, sure.
Because I don't know that much about it myself. It's just like, okay, so Reiki, you mentioned kind of Japan. Is the origins of this, sure, the style here is Japanese or?
Yeah, so it's a really, really old medicine. So it's a Japanese healing modality that is basically you are working with life force energy or Reiki. That's what the word means. Rei is universally guided or divine or however you want to, you know, label it. But it's basically, you know, universal, meaning all around us. It's everywhere. It's everything. It's what animates life. Mm-hmm. And then ki, all healers use ki. This is what shamans use. It's energy. It's
right. So this is ki, like what Chinese chi we hear called chi sometimes.
Chi, yep.
Uh-huh. So prana, ki in Japanese mana, prana.
Hawaiian. Uh-huh. Yep. So there's all different words for this energy. So this is a very intuitive, very highly divine, like up above, you know, the divine powers are sort of guiding this. So you have to become attuned to that energy. So you can come over and you can get a Reiki session, you know, where you get, you know, the hour treatment and you will feel relaxed and you'll feel very good. And you may have, you know, visions or colors that you see and, you know, memories may come up and tingles and all these different kind of, you know, sensations can happen. So I equate that to like going to a classical music concert, a live concert, and feeling the beautifulness of the music. People get chills sometimes when they hear that beautiful music play. You know, that's right. Like getting a Reiki session for your energy.
Okay.
When you get attuned, suddenly you're opened up. All the channels are opened up. And now you not only enjoy the music, but you can read it. You can play the instruments. You kind of have this better understanding of it. So when you hear the music and when you work with the instruments, it's a lot different for you than it would be for the person laying on the table. So it's like this really, it's basically it's when the Reiki master, so you can only learn Reiki from a Reiki master, and you can actually follow your lineage back from your teacher to her teacher to their teacher all the way back to Japan. So I'm about, I think, 10 generations back. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's What did he tell me in India? I have to look. I'd have, don't quote me on that one.
This illuminated being in India is what's coming from a Japanese tradition. Like that's what they learned from. But was this person an Indian person? Just out of curiosity.
The one that I learned from, my teacher?
Yeah. Well, I mean, was that the one that you had the healing from as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he from India or?
Yes. Okay. Yes, he is.
So it's a very spiritual person, but is practicing this technique that, you know, originates in Japan.
Yeah. And they actually, because I looked into the history, you know, when I, you know, once I started teaching Reiki, I wanted to know more about the history. And Dr. Makao Usui, who is the teacher who brought, you know, what Reiki is today, he sort of taught it to everyone. He brought it through to the Western world.
Uh-huh.
But they say that he's studied, you know, Buddhism and he's studied Hinduism, and that they link a lot of this energy work back to India with a lot of what was happening with, you know, a lot of their energy work that they do with, like, the chakras and all of that. So it's kind of
all the Eastern kind of spiritual, metaphysical type of stuff.
Yeah, it's all connected.
It's all connected with the meditation and everything and the nature. Yeah. So, okay, that's cool. And so then the attunement process is part of the training process too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you go and you do, when you take a Reiki 1 class, and it depends on your teacher too, and there's a lot of different ways that it's taught. And actually, Dr. Makao Usui used to teach it for the individual, so he'd teach it differently to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone's different in how they learn and their needs, especially with Reiki 1, where it's all about healing the person, you know, healing the healer.
Right.
But the class is usually a length of time, and you learn about it. You learn the hand placements. You receive your attunement, and that's just one-on-one with the master. And it's a very sacred process. So I can't really speak a lot about the actual what happens,
sure.
But it's, you know, similar to a session, but it's, you know, different hand placements. You're using symbols. There's, you know, you're opening up the client basically so that they can now have this energy channel. You open their crown chakra, their third eye, their throat, and then the chakras in their hands.
Okay.
And most, you know, I've attuned, I think, 13 people last year.
Oh, you are attuning people now as well. You are a Reiki master.
Yeah, I'm teaching it, you know, the way that I learned it in India, but I'm also adding my experience as a nurse and someone who works with the chakra system.
Right.
So it's very detailed. I have to kind of watch how detailed I get, because time can run out on me.
Right. But so we'll reserve that details for the, you know, the trainees. But it's cool to learn. Thank you, because you know, I don't know that much about it.
Yeah.
So I'm beginning to learn this. So you're bringing that kind of like professionalism to the Reiki, and with all your experience, and you're starting to treat yourself. You're starting to treat the family, and mm-hmm. then eventually the situation happens with your husband, huh?
Yeah. So I had been practicing at that point. I think I had just finished my last level, my last attunement, which is the master teacher practitioner level, where now you can teach it to others and you can do the attunements. So I had just gotten that probably, I think, 2 months before everything happened. And it was funny when me and my teacher here, because I did Reiki 1 with the teacher in India, and then I did the other levels here with another woman. And when she did my last one, I had felt like, oh boy, this was in preparation for big work. Like, it felt like really different from the other ones. I can't really describe it. It just felt like, okay, this is on purpose, because you're going to use this. You're going to need it very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. So it was in November of 2016. He had had sudden slurred speech, and I brought him to the ER, and they did a CT scan of his head because they were thinking stroke, which, you know, I'd taken care of stroke patients, and this was different. This was really different. So then they did the CT, and that just showed a mass. They couldn't really tell, like, what it was. They were going to need an MRI to show a little more detail and look, you know, a little differently at it. So, unfortunately, the hospital we were at, because he was stable and he wasn't having a stroke and they knew what it was, well, they sort of knew what it was. They were going to rule out tumor versus abscess. They said there's a mass in there. It could be a tumor. It could be an abscess. We won't know till we get an MRI. So the hospital that we went to is an amazing neuro place to go. If you have any brain problems, it's a really, really great hospital. But their MRI machines are going 24/7. They don't stop. So there was like a 2-day wait list for him. So we get there on a Friday. He has no meds, no IV. So he's just bored out of his mind. So he sends me home, I think, Saturday afternoon. And he was pretty good. You know, we were still waiting for the MRI. His speech was really hard to understand. It almost sounded like his tongue was swollen, like he had marbles in his mouth or he was drunk. You know, it just sounded very, you know, different. Mm-hmm. But he was stable otherwise. So I went home, immediately went upstairs. I did a little sage smudging around myself after I left that hospital because it had really intense energy. And no sooner do I finish saging, I get a phone call from my sister. I thought it was my mom who called, but she told me recently it was her. That's how your mind plays games on you during this stuff. She said, Amy, you got to go back to the hospital. I said, oh no, what's going on? Is it PJ, my husband? And she said, no, it's our, you know, our brother-in-law almost. He's my sister's long-term boyfriend. Had an accident. He was working and fell and hit his head. And now he's being, you know, rushed to the same hospital. So I said, okay, I can't drive. I'm too, like, my nerves were shot. So I called my best friend. She came and got me. We flew to the hospital. We're down in the waiting room. Down comes my husband, you know, because he has off-floor privileges. He's like, what's going on? We didn't tell him what happened. So he's waiting with us. And so we had two people, two very important men, very strong. I mean, my sister's boyfriend is very strong. Like, he's just, you know, a worker. He's you know, reliable. He's dependable. He's just a really strong man. And my husband's the same way. And to see both of them in the hospital is really tough. So anyways, the same doctor who took my sister's boyfriend in and saved his life, he's now doing okay. You know, he had a long road ahead of him, but after about a year of recovery and rehab and everything, he is now working full time and he's doing great. The same doctor who saved him was the doctor who came up and during all of this, I guess at one point they had taken BJ for his MRI, so I wanted to rush upstairs after I knew that he was okay downstairs. So I went upstairs and it's the same doctor who had just told us that my sister's boyfriend was okay, which is making the whole thing crazier.
And he's got to be surprised. The doctor's going to be surprised.
Yeah. He goes, weren't you just downstairs? I say, yes, that's my sister's boyfriend. This is my husband. He goes, oh, my God. He goes, what a day. And this is right around, this was like November 20th, I think, so right near Thanksgiving.
Right.
And so he's like, oh, I'm so sorry all this is happening, blah, blah, blah. And his PA, who was with him, was fabulous too. So he pulls up the image. He says, see, this is not an abscess, unfortunately. It is a tumor. And you know, I just lost it because I didn't know what that meant. I'm a nurse, but my specialty has never been oncology. And it's never been, you know, neuro-oncology. So
yeah, exactly.
This is a whole field that I don't feel confident in. So I'm, you know, I hear that word and I think this is it, you know. Now, mind you, we had only been married at this point for, I think, 7 months. We had just gotten married in Sedona that summer.
Yeah.
So he said, your options are, you have two options. Option A is, you know, we can do a fine needle biopsy, which means we, you know, make a small hole and we just go in once and we get a little piece of the tumor and we can test it. We can see what it is and see if maybe we can do some other treatment, you know, radiation or chemo, which we both weren't thrilled about. I said, okay, what's plan B? And he said, well, then that would involve a partial awake craniotomy where we would remove the tumor, the entire tumor, and then we could biopsy the whole thing and it would tell us a lot more. I said, well, I don't know what partial awake craniotomy means. Explain that to me. And I don't think a lot of people know what that means. And
yeah.
I'm in the medical field and I know what those words mean. So he said, you know, it's exactly as it sounds. We're going to open him up, you know, safely with sedation and pain meds and all that stuff on board. He's not going to feel anything. And then we're going to lift the sedation, meaning we're going to lighten it up until he's arousable, wakeable. And then we won't actually start cutting into the brain until he's awake. He won't feel anything because the brain has no receptors. It can't feel anything.
Uh-huh.
But we have to have him awake in order to remove his tumor because of its location.
Right.
So it was located in the left frontal lobe, affecting his speech, and it could have affected his motor on the right side.
Right.
So I said, we're going to need a moment. He left the room. I explained to my husband what that meant. You know, we had a very intense, you know, first, you know, experience together as newlyweds having this conversation.
Wow.
Had to talk about, you know, what a DNR is, you know, in full code, and, you know, had to have all that signed and taken care of. And, you know, another sort of moment in my life where I was very humbled and realized the temporariness of our lives, you know?
Yeah.
So we decided, let's go least invasive first. And, you know, obviously it's still invasive to put a needle into someone's brain tissue, but we figured it's one pass. It's like, it's very, very, you know, medically, scientifically, robotically computed how it's done. It's very calculated. It's very safe. You know, the doctor went over everything with us. So we agreed to it. And that was done, I think, in December. And the results came back from the biopsy. And they were actually able to drain a little bit of the fluid in the center of the tumor. So by doing that, his speech came back. So we're like, oh, great. You know, that was the worst part of this, was he couldn't talk, you know. So this is a good sign. So we were scheduled. He said, you know, we had the biopsy results, and this doctor went over them with us. And when he told me the results, I didn't know what any of the words meant, you know, because I had never heard any of them before.
Right.
So where I had worked, thank God, I had worked with a woman who did integrative oncology for like 15 years out in Syracuse, and now she was working at this place where I live. So I set up an appointment for her, my husband, and myself with the biopsy results. And I said, Heidi, you got to help me. You got to, like, what does this mean, really? Like, right. Talk to me like a real person. And she had actually worked with primarily glioma patients, you know, stage 3 or higher, which is pretty advanced, pretty fast-growing tumor. So she knew ways to extend life, and if not, then at least the quality of life. She knew the integrative approach to keep people comfy, which I'm all about. So she sat with us for almost 2 hours, and we went over everything. She drew labs, did a whole workup. We talked about everything, and she told me the questions to ask the surgeon.
What was the diagnosis, Amy?
What
was the diagnosis? What did they say?
So he was diagnosed with a astrocytoma, and it was a grade 2, but it could possibly be higher because some of the genetic testing they did on it showed that it was diffuse infiltrating, and it had a very high Ki-67 marker, which is a sign of a growth factor, I guess. All signs pointing to it being aggressive.
Yeah, so like an astrocytoma, potentially aggressive. And what did they give you an idea of prognosis, or what was their thought?
They said he needed surgery, but that's because we were dealing with a surgeon. So I talked to Heidi, and she was the one who told me. She said, okay, well, it's a grade 2. She goes, that's good. You know, that's not a bad sign. She said, astrocytomas aren't, you know, they don't grow as fast as the gliomas. But she actually laid out like a timeline for us. She said, you know, some, you know, normal people, and he is by no means normal. He's abnormally healthy for his age, and he exercises every day, and he eats very strict paleo. He's got so much faith and so much love in his heart, and just positive. He's like a positive ion. Now I'm getting distracted. I'm sorry.
So then what did she said, this is the timeline, like,
yeah, so she said approximately, given that it had this high Ki-67, that it could be, 7 to 11 years, you know, if we stay healthy and, you know,
without surgery, without anything.
Well, she still recommended getting it out.
Okay.
But she said it would likely regrow because of that diffuse infiltrating quality, meaning like it's microscopic. Like it, even if you get the physical part that you can visualize out, you can never really tell like on a microscopic level, you know?
So that's that. And so then you guys kind of go, so then I guess surgery is still planned. When do you decide to try Reiki with him?
So his scheduled surgery was January 17th. His birthday is New Year's Eve, so he wanted, you know, to get through. Actually, for Christmas, he does this beautiful charity event every year for homeless, for people who can't afford Christmas, and for veterans. And last year we got about $14,000 that all went locally, 100% went to the people. So he told the doctor who wanted to operate at the beginning of December, He said, is there any way we can prolong this now that my speech is back? I'm feeling good, doc. You know, let me heal up from this biopsy first.
Right.
You know, he had staples in his head and everything. So the doctor wanted to do the, he said, you know what, let me let him go through December. So he was able to have the party, which went great. He was able to go through his birthday. January 1st, we had another MRI, and it was still kind of looking the same. So he said, okay, we'll schedule you for the 17th.
Okay.
So I think it was about a week before surgery, I had gone to see my Reiki teacher for a session for myself because I was just a mess dealing
right,
with the, you know, my husband about to have surgery, my brother-in-law, like, who I love, I've known him for so long. He's like in rehab with, they had left part of his, the bone of his skull open for the swelling in his brain. So like they do for a lot of like professional, sports players, it's a life-saving technique. So then he had, you know, protection over, he had to wear a helmet and everything, but he was like that for a while. And it was obviously very stressful for my sister. So I'm helping her through that. So whatever. So I said, I need to see you, Sue. You gotta get me lined up here. I'm
right.
So
I saw her.
She fixed me up. I felt really relaxed. It was an amazing session. And afterwards, I'm getting ready to leave. And she goes, Aim, I don't know why it's coming to me, but and this is how we are. We get these little downloads with each other. And we work on each other now, too, which is really fun. But she said, one of my teachers taught me a technique with Reiki, and it's called Reiki Psychic Surgery. And she told me all about it and all how to do it. And I said, you know what? I'm going to put 100% of my heart and soul into this, Sue, and we're going to give it a whirl. Because right. I do not want him to have this open, partially awake surgery. I think this right. is crazy. I don't think this is the right thing at all. And everything right. about this feels like no. So
she prepared you in this technique, yeah. and you're all for it. And he's
yeah.
kind of an ideal patient for this kind of thing, given his
yes.
spirit and everything.
Yeah, so then, and he's still, at this point, you know, he's still healing up and everything, too. You know, this right. is not too long ago. Just had his surgery for the yeah. biopsy. So
yeah.
I lay him down. I do a regular, you know, almost full hour, except, you know, I left a lot of the head stuff, you know, to be because I was going to be doing, obviously, a lot of work up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I did about 45 minutes, you know, of his whole body. So at this point, he's, you know, sleeping. He usually falls asleep because he needs to relax.
Sure.
And then I start the session on his head and I follow all the steps and, you know, part of it, we are talking and I'm engaging with him and asking him questions about what he's feeling and sensing in there and, you know, giving the, you know, actual physical problem, a shape and a size and a feeling and a smell.
Based
and a color.
On his feedback.
Yes. I'm making him tell me what color okay. is it? How big okay. is it? What does it feel like inside uh-huh. of your head? You know, give it a shape, give it a texture, you know, all of this.
Are you visualizing based on what he's telling you, you're visualizing it? Or do you have your own vision?
I'm doing, like, I have my eyes closed. I'm doing some work with my hands on his head. I'm holding different positions. I'm using crystals. As he's talking to me, I'm doing this sort of preparation work that's sort of coming to me intuitively. Mm-hmm. So that part wasn't, you know, part of it. It was just something that I said, this is what I'm going to do to make this problem that's really hard for us to even accept that he has. Let's make right. it physical
okay.
so that we can then remove at least like the energy of the problem. And that's right. the idea behind the surgery is that you're removing that the aggressiveness, the infiltrating, the high
right.
key 67, the
right.
fact that it's gonna like invade. You're removing that stuff.
Right.
So I did what she told me to do for the actual removal part, and then afterwards you know, I asked him, I said, you know, can you feel it? You know, is it there? And he said, no, it just feels like this little pinchy thing in there. It just feels really weird. It feels different. And he goes, I'm really tired. And I said, okay, well, why don't you go to bed? I'll finish up in here. And I just kind of, you know, gave thanks and did some prayers and sage the room. And he slept for about 8 hours after that, almost like you would for, you know, recovering after surgery, you know?
What time did you do this at? What time? Was it at nighttime or?
He didn't sleep through the night, so I think it was during the day. Yeah, it must have been
okay.
during the day, but towards the later afternoon.
Okay, so then just he passes out till early
yep.
morning.
I call my teacher. I'm like, is this okay that he felt a pinchy feeling? You know, because I at this
yeah.
point, you know,
no, that's scary. Yeah, it's a scary situation.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm just looking for any kind of support and guidance. He's like, yes, all of this stuff. And he's sleeping. That's great. You know, don't worry, Amy. You know, you have so much power. You got this. And I was
uh-huh.
like, okay. So the night before we're scheduled for surgery, we went out to this really nice restaurant local here that uses really good, you know, local food. And we know everybody there. And we'd actually, one of our first dates was there several years ago. So we decided, let's get a really good meal because, you know, right. you're going to have crappy hospital food and you're going to be healing. Like, we're right. accepting that it's going to have the surgery at this point. So you're
having this lovely meal.
Yeah, so we had this beautiful dinner, and the whole time we didn't talk about it. We didn't even think about it. I didn't even think to myself, oh, my God, in less than 12 hours, my husband's going to go through this crazy procedure. Right. I didn't feel like it was going to happen, you know, and I didn't realize that at the time.
It was like a real relaxed vibe
in
the air.
So I don't sleep. He sleeps. I don't know how. I'm like a nervous ball of a mess, and so we get to the first, they tell us, okay, the doctor needs to get a scan this morning before you have the surgery. So you need to go over to this off-site building because I told you the MRI is always busy. And they wanted to get it that morning. So they have this off-site building that's, I don't know, less than half a mile from the hospital.
Right.
So I drive them over there. We get there. I have not slept, mind you. And I'm usually a very nice nurse.
Right.
They're like, okay, you know, we're here to take you back for your CT. And I said, no, it should be an MRI. He's not had a CT since the ER. We've only been doing MRIs, having surgery today. Can you call the doctor and just confirm that it's actually an MRI?
Yeah.
So I'm a nurse too, so I know about like orders and how it works.
Yeah, you can make a mistake.
Yeah. It's definitely a CT. Okay, whatever. So I let her go in, and I'm huffing and puffing. PJ's like, just relax, Amy. Calm down. And he's so chill this whole time. I don't know why. So he comes out. I'm like, all right, let's go. We're going to be late. So we rush back over to the hospital. I go do valet parking. We're walking in. We get a phone call. Hi, this is Heather from the neurology group. Doctor wants you to go and get an MRI now. He got your CT, but now he wants an MRI. I'm like, I knew it. We're going to miss our appointment. This is crazy. What's happening? It felt like it was just everything was wrong. So we go back. I look at the nurse. I'm like, we're here for MRI. She just gives me a look.
Yeah.
But she didn't know what I had going on. So he gets it. We go back to the hospital, park through valet, run in there. As we were walking in the main corridor, the PA who had been there the very, very first day, and she had taken care of my brother-in-law too, so she's there with him, she's there in the hallway, and she goes, okay, guys, so doctor wants to talk to you. We're actually going to go up here. And I said, okay, but she had, you know, the full surgical gear on. I'm like, she looks like she's ready to work. What's going on? So instead of going down to the OR where I know he was supposed to go, we end up going upstairs really, really high, like I forget what floor it was. We come out to this beautiful office. The receptionist is like, oh, Mr. Martone, we're so happy you're here, blah, blah, blah. We'll take you back. And then all the nurses that we walked past were really giddy and really smiling. And it was very strange. I'm like, what is going on today? You know, I'm a mess at this point. So we walked down the hallway. Now we're in like the surgeon's like suite, beautiful rooms, you know, the area that most people don't ever see in hospitals. Right.
They're where the celebrations happen.
Apparently,
yeah.
There's a whole secret club for that.
Yeah.
So we're walking down the hallway, and there's three doctors like standing outside the door, and I'm like, "Hi," and they're like, "Good morning." So we come in, and there's the doctor and his PA or his other PA that had been there too. And on the screen are the four MRI photos I think I showed you in the jungle.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, I want to explain to you, you know, what we're seeing here, you know, because I took the best photos I could to try to give you a visual. He said, but first I need to ask you guys, you know, have you, what have you been doing? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you know, did you, have you done any treatments or any, you know, the holistic, because I told him that I worked with, you know, integrative doctors and that was our, you know, preference. And I said, no, he hasn't done anything except for exercise, you know, prayer, just keeping a good attitude, you know, eating good food. And he's like, okay, so the reason I ask is, so here's his scan from this morning. And he zooms in on it. And it's this, what used to be a big, round, white ring is now this little, tiny, little white spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a big, dark ring where the white was, like an empty space almost. It looked like a big, like empty hole there. He said, so this is his current MRI. And this is what looks like a post-surgical MRI. My jaw drops as soon as he says post-surgical. I look at PJ, he's smiling.
Yeah.
And then I look at the doctor, he said, can you guys, you know, like, can you explain, you know, what's going on? And I said, can you explain what's going on? Why would this thing shrink, you know? And I said, to me, it looks like it shrank, right? Because it has. And it looks like he's had it, like, surgically removed. This looks like a surgical post-scan. So he said there's a possibility that the biopsy, you know, was therapeutic, and, you know, maybe it offered opportunity for the body to kind of get in there when normally you can't get into the brain, the immune system, whatever. Maybe that was the theory, and I kind of threw that idea around too. And so then I said, Doc, I do have to tell you, I did do something to my husband. And he said, yeah. And I said, so I'm a Reiki practitioner. Do you know what Reiki is? And he said, no. And I said, okay. I said, well, it's energy healing, and I did a technique that involves removing the energy of the problem so that the problem can heal on a physical level. And he's looking at me with a strange look, and so is his PA and, you know, the other three doctors that were there.
Right.
And he doesn't really, like, say anything about it. Like, we're all just kind of astounded. He said, yeah, like, we've never seen this happen before, you guys. So, you know, we're going to present this at the tumor board, but you don't have to have surgery today because it would be more dangerous to go in at this point. And that's what I would have left, because that was the little piece. That little white spot was right next to the area of his motor and speech function because they had done mapping. And he's like, yeah, it looks like you've already had surgery, so you can go home. And we literally skipped our whole way out of the hospital.
It's incredible. It
So this miracle happens. And so you... So that's that. So then he doesn't have any more symptoms, huh? Like, no more problems?
Not with the speech or anything. He had had a little bit of the, you know, some expected post-biopsy, because it is technically, you know, a brain injury.
Right.
So we're still seeing some of the residual with that, but nothing like, you know, he can walk, talk, you know, function fully. Like, you know, he's doing so great. It could have been so much worse. And just seeing what the biopsy can do, I can't imagine what having the debulking surgery would have done, you know.
Right.
I'm glad that right now everything is still, to this day, stable. We just had a scan.
That was January 2017. That was the scan. So just for my part, like, Amy is a friend of mine. I've spent a lot of time with Amy in Peru and in Arizona, and I've met her husband, and I've seen the scans. So just to be another voice in the story. But... So then you just had another, how many scans has he had since then, or MRI or CT?
Quite a few, because for a while we were going monthly, and then we went to 2 months, and then we went to 6 months, and we've just finished his second 6 month scan, and that was, stable, no change, no growth, nothing.
Just the same spot, or whatever, the post-surgical spot.
Same little tiny little dot. And what we've noticed now is that the big black, like, hole area is getting smaller. And he said that's the brain accommodating for that space. And that's why he still may be having, you know, some of the symptoms.
Recovery,
literally,
yeah.
His brain's kind of shifted around.
And they haven't tried to hire you, or do they ever talk to you
no.
about cases? Have they ever?
They don't believe in this stuff.
They don't believe
There's people that are like 100% about it, and they're like, Amy, it's amazing. And then there's other people who are like, no.
But they presented at the tumor board. Did they have you guys there? Were you invited to that? Or?
No, nothing
just, you
happened
guys are just,
from it. But
just
the funny thing was, his nephew was a new nurse, and he was doing a rotation at the same hospital. And he heard another nurse, a female nurse in the hospital, in the ER, saying that there was a miracle man, that, like, some miracle tumor guy or something. So
right.
I guess word had gotten out.
You haven't seen any, like, they're not making drawings of you and worshiping you or praying to you.
No,
they don't even know.
That.
They pretend like you don't exist. Yeah, well, it's really
something. I don't want that either.
No, of course not. No, but that's really something, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to him that he's able to avoid surgery, you know, at this point. And, you know,
really
whatever
blessed.
You guys are being responsible and continuing to monitor everything.
And we both live very, you know, we both have to live healthy lifestyles because of our, you know, conditions. So it's funny how we found each other, too, in that way. You know, we both eat really strict, so we're the perfect date for each other, but the worst date to take out with other people.
Right.
But
wow.
We both have strong spiritual beliefs, and you know, I think that's a big part of it. We both have a lot of faith. We're both very positive people. Mm-hmm. We try not to complain or, yeah. you know, just bring negative energy to us and we surround ourselves with like minds.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's really something. Yeah, no, I just wanted to kind of like capture that story.
And, oh, thank you.
And, you know, it's almost been an hour. It's kind of about right, you know?
Okay.
And so we'll just see. We'll just put it up there and share it with people. And it's not like we're saying that's the answer for astrocytoma. We're just saying,
right.
Wow, you know, this kind of thing happens. And people don't – we don't know what happened. Nobody knows for sure what happened. But
But
people should hear about it, I believe. And that's kind of the modern spirit message is there are these kind of spontaneous healings or these kind of spiritual miracles. Yeah. And we're trying to learn from them and learn about them. And it's like, well, you know, maybe – there should be more interest in Reiki and more interest in this kind of psychic surgery and, you know, like you as a medical professional who takes things so serious and and you're training and you're learning and, but you're continuing to practice Reiki, right? I mean, you're thinking about doing more Reiki than less.
Yeah, and that's why I've really transitioned to working part-time as an RN because now I can, you know, I can work as a Reiki practitioner and have clients, and I'd much rather it's the experiences that I'm having with my Reiki clients compared to any experience, you know, in the hospital passing pills or giving IVs. You know, it's I've had miracles many since, you know, my husband that, you know, mini ones and big ones. Another time, another place, I could tell you a really interesting one. It's powerful medicine. You have to think, you know, we didn't always have MRI machines. We didn't always have the ability to draw blood and process it and look at it. We didn't have the surgeries. We didn't have clean and sterile technique. You know what I mean?
Right.
People, you know, when in the jungle, there's no CVS, there's no urgent care. You know, you have to use what's around.
And right.
Yeah. I don't think what we're talking about is that crazy. I think that it's actually more normal. And what we do on a conventional level is really pretty crazy.
Well, and it's kind of, you know, maybe somewhere in the ballpark of when people say, oh, you know, when somebody loses their sight, then they develop all these other, you know, senses and they refine it. And in the same sense, you know, when you don't have CT, you don't have MRI, and, you know, you're kind of exploring people's intuitive abilities, you know, the way that they would be more revered in the culture, especially when people are getting results, you know, and that's the most interesting thing, you know, and when the alternative is so, you know, unfortunately, potentially damaging, it's like we need, it's coming back, you know, people want to know about this stuff, but like you said, there's a lot of faith, there's a lot of like clean living and serious dedication and training that goes into some of this kind of stuff, and some people want the quick fix and stuff like that, and perhaps it doesn't work in that kind of setting, you know, and you hear a lot about that.
Yeah, and I think true healing, really, it happens in layers, and it happens over time, and the sort of, like, superficial, and I tell my clients this, like, your most acute, meaning, like, your most current, you know, annoying symptom right now, whether that's, like, pain or, you know, digestive issues or, I don't know, migraines or insomnia, those are the first things to kind of heal. People say, oh my God, since my last session, I've been sleeping so good. You know, maybe I'll see you in like 3 weeks. I think I'm good for a while. You know, it kind of like resets the relaxation mechanism. The longer clients work with me, what I've found over the years, and I have people that have been coming 2-3 years and they come religiously on a monthly basis because they've healed those outside problems. Like the sore arthritic knee is better. She doesn't have pain anymore. Or, you know, this chronic issue is now, you know, better. But what I'm running into now is that the deeper you go, now we get into more emotional issues, less physical and more spiritual or emotional. And it's just wonderful to see that because I've witnessed that myself in my healing, is that it was very physical and I've really healed most of my physical ailments. And now we're sort of on that root one that's been since birth, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, it's really interesting. It's a great thing to explore and experience. We should do a session sometime, Joe, so you can experience.
I know. I need a Reiki healing, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Sounding pretty good. No, I'd like to experience it, you know, and it's something like, and you know, I mean, the shamanic healing and the ayahuasca ceremonies is, it's obviously it's different, but it's related, you know, it's related to energetic healing.
They're very similar. After witnessing what I witnessed last September and then witnessing what I witnessed with you guys just recently, it's the worlds are all starting to kind of come together for me. And I'm just at the point right now where I'm looking at it from a really, really broad lens and trying to make the connection of it all. But yeah, it's like what I see in Reiki, what I see in meditation, what I see in ayahuasca, what I see doing yoga or just being mindful or walking in nature and what I feel, all those things are the same.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we're all doing these things to kind of get our bodies to these higher vibrations or these more spiritual places, and just really interesting work.
Well, and it speaks to kind of like the, you know, the tangible elements of it or the more universal elements of, like, you know, like you said, like the mind body, like this is what I talk about a lot. Okay, mind body, people are starting to kind of consider that pretty universal, that humans, this mind body relationship exists in all the different human beings. And then the emotionality, you know, it's like, okay, that's very widely accepted that that's universal. And then this relationship into the energy, you know, and the immaterial side that has been seen as very much like related to somebody's cultural beliefs or their religious beliefs or their spiritual, but then finding that like there's it's a lot more universal than we thought, you know. You see this guy from India studying Reiki from Japan, even though even though those two traditions were interrelated always, because both sides were just working on this meditative intuitive investigation into the body, you know, and what's going on. And then you're learning it as an American and practicing it, and then these Western medical doctors are like, whoa, what just happened? What, you know, I mean, the big question is, like, what happened to this guy? Something happened, and, you know, so they could tell, you could tell the biopsy story, but, you know, for whatever it's worth, they've never seen it before, and they've biopsied many, many people. So that has to be stated, like, if we're trying to deal in fact. So this is this is one of the issues, because people, you know, they believe that. And it's like, yeah, well, you're choosing to believe what you're choosing to believe, because there's actually no factual, substantial evidence for what you're saying, because they biopsy people there all the time. And he's saying, we've never seen this before. So, you know, it's a theory. It's a theory based on faith. And so that's what my point is, like, the faith doesn't go away. Everyone's taking a leap of faith in their particular belief system and their mental framework, you know, because we all encounter a mystery at some point. So they saw this mystery and they're telling themselves, it was the biopsy, you know, let's not have her at the tumor board. You know, it's beautiful, let's move on. But it kind of shakes up their worldview. But that's still their faith, you know. That's what we're looking at. And so there's a universality to that too, that people's belief systems, that eventually there is a frontier into what we can actually prove and know, and still we experience beyond that. You know?
Absolutely. They've studied Reiki now clinically, and that this is what interests me, because I have just as much of the metaphysical, like I can go way deep into the subconscious shadows, all of it. Like that's where I live most of the time.
Right.
But I also need like the physical and the evidence and the science and the data, like the research, you know, because I have that medical background and that part of my brain. But they've done a ton of research on Reiki in the clinical setting, especially surgeries. They have people come in and do Reiki before, during, and after surgery, and it cuts down on the need for sedation, the need for pain meds post-op. Healing time is shortened, less like complications, better wound healing and scar healing. Reiki is wonderful for burns. They've had people go around, and it just kind of basically like amplifies the body's own healing potential, which we need to remember that we have, that we don't need medicine to always. I mean, definitely emergency meds for sure. There's definitely things that I'm not completely against medicine, but you know, I do believe that we have to trust that we have this sort of inner physician that gives us little like, hey, little like indicator lights, this is going on. Maybe we should not eat this stuff if our stomach's feeling like this. Like you get those voices, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't trust it and they don't listen to it. And they override that system. But if you get attuned to it, if you really like, and I think meditation really helps kind of like line you up with that alert system. Because that's when I listen. I go in and I check in on my body during meditation.
Right.
I think that's why Reiki works so well. It helps to kind of amplify that inner healing, you know, capability right. that we all have.
Yeah, which is like we're saying is, you know, my brother was saying the other day, because with the modern spirit, the idea is, okay, we have the medical perspective, we have the physical, you know, the mind, body, even the emotional, and there's something more, you know, that, mm-hmm. that the whole, if we follow the whole stream, we end up like looking over this edge into something more, and there it is, you know, just like mm-hmm. with quantum physics or whatever, you go down, you know, all you follow the mathematics, you follow the measurements and the atoms, mm-hmm. and then you get into this place, wow, there's something more out there, and just yeah. and not looking away from that and realizing, like you're saying, like, okay, there's resiliency, you know, mm-hmm. of health, and we know that. We know some people bounce back faster, and we want that. You know, we mm-hmm. want that for our healing. We want that for surgical recovery. And it saves money, you know.
Yeah.
It saves money, so we should invest, you know, in this and see. And you know, there maybe some people are faking it. Maybe some people don't know how to make it work. But some people do, and learning how to distinguish that and mm-hmm. making use of these capacities that we have. You know, how yeah. important it is. And just, I got to finish it up here in a minute. And
yeah.
I'll just throw it out there with this one little statement of that I was in medical school. I was applying to medical school or residency. I don't remember what it was. And I was there at like the different programs. And we were sitting around, all the interviewees are just waiting for our turn. And somebody was talking about acupuncture, you know, and it was mm-hmm. in this very medical environment. And there was a guy from China there. So he was saying, well, you know, like, yeah, I guess a lot of people don't believe in it. He's like, well, there was even, you know, there's legends that, for example, when the emperor's daughter was ill, that, you know, they had to check her pulse to do a pulse diagnosis, but they weren't allowed to touch her. So they would put a string, you know, on her pulse, and then the person would have to feel the string. And from that, they would make the diagnosis. And he's wow. like, you know, people, you know, they could easily just say, ah, come on, that's ridiculous, and that's just a legend. And he's like, but you know, there's so many capacities that we have that we don't realize, you know, unless we're exposed to them. And yeah. and his example was, he came from China and he came to the United States, and then he was watching some basketball game and he saw Michael Jordan do a 360 dunk. And he was like, he said he never thought that a person could do that, you mm-hmm. know, until he saw him do it, because he'd never seen it before.
Right.
And he's just like, there's a lot of capacities, you know, that exist beyond our imagination, and we have to experience it for ourselves to really, you know, to open our minds to it.
Like, break down the labels and the expectations and those, like, glass ceilings, you know, or realize they're made out of glass, that even with diagnosis, yeah, like Heidi told us, you know, you only have 7 to 11 years to live, you know, typically.
Right.
But I'm like, no, we're not the typical people at all.
Exactly.
You know, and I definitely, you know, think that. And I also think that, you know, the reason why, you know, some people, you know, especially in the medical profession, have a hard time with treating the spirit is because even psychologists don't get it. You know, I don't think they've got it, because they're looking at it from that, you know, chemical kind of thing.
Right.
But I think people are uncomfortable because you can't quite put spirituality or the human spirit into like a box, and you can't like feel, well, you can kind of assess it, but you can't like label it and feel the pulse of it and hear the sound of it. You know, it's hard for people to, just like people can't imagine how far space goes or how small we can go. Like what's in a cell's cell, you know?
Right.
So I just think it's a matter of mental capacity too, you know?
Sure. And it's like, I think sometimes what I bring up is that this kind of approach, you know, it requires like you to look into your own mysterious places.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And definitely. that's uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's one of the big holdups, you know, around the expansion of this, is like kind of making people, you know, having compassion that is hard to do and that is uncomfortable, and trying to help people find the comfort and the space to do that. And usually when they do, their mind starts to open. You know, that's my experience working down in the jungle with people coming down, you know. Yeah. The ayahuasca ends up walking them down that road, and then they start realizing, wow, there's, you know, there's more going on here than I thought, and everyone else is talking about it, so it seems like there really actually is.
Yes. And
So that's that. But I gotta go.
All right.
But we'll be in touch. So we'll do another episode sometime, but I still want to talk to you more, but thank you so much, Amy. Incredible.
Thank you, Joe. This is great.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm glad we did
Take care, okay?
All right, you too. We'll be in touch, okay?
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.